We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Anytime you play good baseball, I'm pleased with that. I mean, it doesn't always work out as a win, but if you play enough good games and you play the game right, you win your fair share. We just need to get back a little bit more meatloaf on occasion, the 2 out of 3 situation. We've not been able to do that yet. We've got to get back on track winning series.
Middays on the Score.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves, who clinched the playoffs, will be there for the final regular season weekend this Saturday and Sunday. Saturday is a first responder night, touch a truck, and sunglasses giveaway, all courtesy of Turtle Wax. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for info. Bernstein and McKnight, part of our Score opening day festivities here at Country Club on North Clark Street, here with White Claw Hard Seltzer made pure. Jim DeShays is the television analyst for Cubs baseball, and he joins the Bernstein and McKnight Show on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. JD, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Okay. Is everything all right with the Cubs? Is it okay? Or how close are we to crisis?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, to tell you the truth. I mean, obviously, it's not a good start, but they've got a chance to hit a reset button here. They've got a stretch of 22 out of 30 at Wrigley coming up starting today. It's go time. I mean, the old cliche is it's too early to panic, but it's not too early to be concerned because there are some, significant issues with this ball club right now.
Yeah, JD, I was looking through some of the Cubs relievers and even some of the starters, and they don't get a whole lot of swings and misses on pitches outside the strike zone. Do they, relative to the rest of the league, do they need to get more of those, or do they need to work better within the strike zone? Which change is better for them?
Well, I you have to be what you are as a pitcher, and just when you look at the construction of the roster, there's not relative to the league, they don't have a bunch of swing and miss guys. They don't have a bunch of power arms, and they don't generate that many swings and misses. So what they're looking for is soft contact balls on the ground, let the defense work for them, minimize the walks. That's the most important thing, especially for the bullpen guys. That's been really shaky. So I don't know that you can, take a guy who's always been a, average or maybe a touch below average in terms of his strikeout rate or a swing and miss rate and say, you need to get better at this. You just need to, do a good job of being who you are when you're right. And that's where the fix needs to come from. And most importantly, again, it comes back to, limiting the walks out of the bullpen.
So much of this around the margins, the way the Cubs are built, they need the help where they can get it. And one of those aspects is in what we now understand to be pitch framing. And as long as human beings are still calling balls and strikes, we now have identified that and measured that as something that matters. And I listen to you a lot, and I notice there hasn't been direct criticism necessarily of Wilson Contreras, but you go out of your way to compliment calm, serene catchers physically in that way. Jeff Mathis and some others. And I hear it in your voice when you say, when you compliment someone's setup back there, is that a way of allowing us to sort of meet you halfway in Contreras being a little jumpy back there?
Well, yeah, and it may be just my bias. As a pitcher, I always liked a guy who was real quiet back there. We may have pitchers on the staff that don't have an issue with it, but I think generally catchers who present a good, stable target and are quiet behind the plate help a pitcher throw strikes, give you a good setup. I think, the bigger issues for Wilson in terms of the statistics, the pitch framing stuff, that's more of, just framing the ball, giving the umpire a good look, manipulating his body in such a way when he catches pitches that he makes sure he gets those borderline calls. And again, I think that's, really important with our staff because we don't have a bunch of strikeout pitchers. I think it's very difficult for me, and I've seen the numbers, I've seen the where he ranks in terms of pitch framing and defensive runs saved and things like that. It's hard for me to wrap my brain around those numbers to completely buy in, but I will say for sure there's room for improvement in that department.
What is the checklist you expect? expect, JD, for Carl Edwards as he's working at AAA Iowa? I know a lot of Cub fans are fed up with the guy, but I look at the bullpen the way it's constructed, and their best hope is probably getting them right and being the guy they think he is.
Right, and that, you know, you've heard Joe say it, we need Carl to be Carl, and I think what he means by that, he's a power arm who can generate the swings and misses, who can get some strikeouts in high-leverage situations, keep people off base, keep the ball out of play late in games. So I don't know if he sees it this way, but I think this is a great opportunity for him to get out of the bright lights, to go down there, reset. I think, you know, he, to me, maybe got a little caught up in trying to make a big fix with, you know, trying to, different mechanics, trying to emulate Kenley Jansen and some of the other things we saw him try to do. And again, just go back and do what you did when you were right. Easier said than done, for sure. But going down there, working at AAA, hopefully he can get on a little bit of a dominant stretch, get his mojo back, come back to the big leagues with a little confidence, and then take that out onto the game mound. You know, the other part is there's a couple kids down there with big arms in Norwood and Maples. We're waiting for them to take a step in the right direction, and if they figure it out, then maybe they can be late inning guys up here. That's, you know, it's a big maybe.
We were looking at some data that was compiled by Matthew Trueblood over at Baseball Prospectus regarding the way pitchers are getting Chris Bryant out, and if you boil it down, it's been not throwing him the fastballs he wants to hit and making him have to swing at off-speed stuff and at breaking stuff. Can it be that simple? Because he doesn't look right.
You know, what I looked at, his ground ball rate is really high, and so he's been pulling a lot of balls on the left side of the infield. And what I noticed yesterday in Milwaukee, it looked to me like he was really trying to keep his hands inside and hit the ball the other way. With that approach, you're more likely to hit it in the air. And he hit, you know, he hit a fly ball to center. He hit a little floater for a base hit into shallow right. It wasn't pretty, but at least it was a positive result. So I think, and again, I'm not a hitting guru by any stretch, but I think he's just trying to focus on hitting the ball to the middle of the diamond and the other way. And if you take that approach, you're more likely to put that breaking ball in play and not chase the slider off the play. Because if you're worried about getting the barrel out in front of a good fastball and they're throwing your breaking balls away, then you're going to swing and miss. So I've seen the breaking balls and then the elevated fastball. You know, they'll throw that up above his hands from time to time. You know, it's a constant battle for hitters, and it's, you know, still such a very small sample. I think guys get caught in between sometimes where they're trying to tweak and retool their swing or make minor adjustments, and sometimes it's a matter of just believing in yourself, going out and being athletic and looking for a pitch you can just put a good swing on.
Talk with Cubs television analyst Jim Deshays here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. John Lester goes for the Cubs today, and he has just been John Lester through two starts. I feel like it's such a simple thing to say that he's just out there doing what he does. I wonder if you can, I don't know, put some pitching pros on it or what have you. What does he do so well that just looks like he's out there doing what he's always done?
Yeah, well, he doesn't give in. He rarely throws the ball over the heart of the plate. He's always trying to either pick the outside corner with his two-seamer or throw the cutter under the hands of a right-handed hitter. And then the breaking ball, he likes to mix in and keep it short. But if you watch a typical John Lester start, you're not going to see a whole lot of pitches over the heart of the plate. So that's why, you know, depending on who's working home plate, the umpire can be a critical factor. It can be for any pitcher, but I think maybe more so for John. You know, so if he's got a guy who's going to give him the edges, he's really good at exploiting that. If he's got a guy that's going to squeeze him and force him to throw over the heart of the plate, then he has to adapt his game plan a little bit, maybe throw the changeup and the curveball a little bit more often. The other part of it is, you know, and I'm sure you guys are, because you guys are kind of into all the metrics and the advanced approach, the tunneling thing where, you know, his release point on the cutter and the two-seamer, very difficult for hitters to pick that up. So whereas some, you watch a Hamels game and you're thinking, okay, it's fastball here, it's changeup, it's about, you know, fooling the hitter with change of speed and location. With John, there's deception just in his release point with his sinker and his cutter because they have a hard time picking it up out of his hand. They don't know which way it's going to go. So it's a little late movement one way or the other off the barrel.
when you look at Kyle Hendricks and the difficulty that he's had, especially early in games, I think I heard you guys saying that this is the only twice has he had consecutive outings this short. He's not getting sink on the sinker. He's not getting drop on the changeup. And I haven't looked at spin rate, but is there anything that you're seeing as consistently not happening?
Yeah, I just think he's searching right now for touch, for feel, to get that movement. I'm not looking at spin rate, but I'm watching the ball on the monitor, and I'm watching it, you know, the way the hitters are reacting, and he's just making mistakes because he's not getting the movement he typically gets, and he's made some mistakes over the heart of the plate. You know, I think, you know, he's such a touch guy. You know, it may be coming out of spring training. Remember, he was supposed to make that one start in the Cactus League, but that's the day he signed the extension, and he was in the MRI machine for a long time. So, you know, he did side work or worked in a minor league game, and then the season starts, and you got extra time off because of the off days. So I think he just hasn't gotten into the flow of the season yet. I think he's a guy that really benefits from going out there every fifth day where he can really lock in his release point and his feel on a sinker-changeup combination. So, based on what we've seen from him in the past, I'm very confident that that's going to happen. You know, he's really good at making adjustments. And the other part of it is that Milwaukee club is really good. You know, so you don't get away with mistakes you might get away with against some other clubs.
Alan Webster learned that against Ryan Braun. You can't throw that pitch there, but the Cubs are hoping that they've picked up a guy who is, you know, a fairly well-touted prospect in two different systems, then goes overseas and pitches. He's one of the latest guys, JD, to come back from being overseas and pitch well. What do you hear from old buddies around the league and guys who are part of player development searches that are bringing pitchers back from either the KBO or Japan? Like, is there something going on with pitchers that have been here, raised here, went over there, and came back to find success?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that, and I haven't really spoken to anybody. At any length about it. You know, Michaelis over in St. Louis comes to mind. I don't know if it's just the way they train over there or if guys go over there with a fresh outlook and change their approach. I know Webster, talking to a couple scouts this spring, they said they feel like he's throwing his four-seamer a lot more than he had been, that he was more of a sinker guy, and he's just kind of turning that four-seamer loose, and we saw it 96 yesterday. Maybe it's a matter of getting healthy. I don't know about pitcher usage. Over in Japan and Korea, if they're not used as much, therefore they get a chance to rebuild arm strength. I would be, you know, if I told you I knew the answer to that, I'd be lying. I try to save that till the game.
Are the current defensive issues the Cubs are facing just variance and aberration, or a product of nervousness, lack of concentration, et cetera?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. The easy answer is that they're pressing because they're having a hard time winning games and they're trying to do too much, and that appeared to be the case in the game in Atlanta where they made six errors. I think there were three throws that probably shouldn't have been made, guys trying to force the issue. So there are errors of you know, being overzealous, trying to make plays. And then the catcher's interference is somewhat inexplicable that we had three of those in the three consecutive games. So I would, you know, putting on my psychologist hat, I would say maybe they're just pressing a little bit, certainly in that one game in Atlanta. But, you know, we came out of Texas raving about the fact that they didn't commit any errors. As long as those games were, and as long as the guys were out on the field just standing there through the slog of some of those games, they played errorless ball in Texas. So it's mostly been one really bad game and a couple head-scratchers.
What's this Pirates club look like to you as they come into Wrigley?
They just swept the Reds. They pitch really well, and I think that's why they have a chance to be a surprise team. I don't think they're going to win the division, but I think they have a chance to be better than a lot of folks think if their rotation stays healthy. The guy Tyone going today is developing into an elite starter. Archer's good. Musgrove's got a big arm. Williams was really good last year and is capable of being good again. And even Jordan Lyles, who's their fifth guy, I'm really intrigued by because he's made some changes. So I think their strength is clearly pitching. So Lester Tyone today, I'm thinking this is going to be a game where four runs might be enough to get it done, even on a beautiful day here at Wrigley. But they got to be feeling good about themselves. They're coming off a four-game sweep. And they're a little banged up, so the Cubs catch them at a good time, right? Polanco's still out, will be for a while. Corey Dickerson, the left fielder, is hurt. So they don't have some of their main guys in the lineup.
And apparently spoiling for a fight, too. We've seen the video and we've seen the still photos of Yasiel Puig taking on the world. And I don't know if it's a product of old school baseball guy Clint Hurdle or if that's just Chris Archer.
Snapping.
Yeah, just snapping a little bit. But the circumstances of that were unfortunate yesterday because I like Chris Archer, but come on, man. You can't be that guy and then get mad at somebody for hitting a ball into the river off you.
Exactly. There's this whole let the kids play movement. So the idea is if guys want to bat flip and do the moonwalk after they strike you out, you're supposed to just kind of roll with it. And if you're going to be the guy that's doing the moonwalk coming off the mound, then you have to be willing to accept the guy flipping his bat or admiring his home run. That's kind of insane, my point of view on it.
JD, appreciate it. Great talking with you. Have a great broadcast.
Hey, thank you. Good to be with you guys. Have a good day.
That is Jim DeShays. You hear him with Len Casper. I will say this, that as the Cubs have struggled, it has not made that broadcast any less interesting.
Oh, no. I mean, there
has been sort of a tension that is bringing out a lot of the best from some of the smartest people observing what's going on.
I'll agree with that. And I don't mean this as a shot, really, but as any broadcast goes and one game starts to tilt one way or the other, broadcasters will often look to the team on the other side and do a little insight into what the Brewers look like or what the Rangers look like or what the Pirates look like or something. Hopefully for Len and JD, they're just talking about the Cubs this week here at Wrigley. But the stuff that they were talking about with the Brewers bullpen and how Craig Counsell will use Josh Hader now that Jeffress and Knebel and a number of those guys are going to be down for a little bit, like that's advanced, that's new baseball. That's an old school dude in JD, a pitcher who understands how this game is moving and how dangerous some of those arms out of the pen are. It's a really good broadcast when they look on the other side of things, too.
We've got an NCAA National Championship game tonight, and I wish I had a rooting interest. I really do. I could make something up, and I could tell you here that that Virginia can avenge their demons from last year, or the upstart Red Raiders out of Lubbock. I get started saying it, and then I run out of steam because I can't tell you who I want to win.
Texas Red, yeah.
Right.
The Virginia Cavaliers.
It all started. I mean, I'm going to watch. I'm fascinated from a basketball X and O perspective, but I would love to have a gangbusters basketball game that comes down to the wire, goes into multiple OTs, because that last one, it was a fun weekend, and that's a foul. It's a foul. It's a foul.
It's a foul. It's a foul. It's a foul. You have to call that. It's also a double dribble, and then the possession before that was also a foul that should have been called. Shocker of all shockers, the reffing in an NCAA tournament hasn't been great.
And I need you as the Lucas Giolito whisperer. You know him well. You watch him closely. And that was a major setback for him after what was really a promising outing.
Sounds like we've got some work to do before we get out of here. Lawrence Holmes in about 45. It's our Cubs opening day broadcast at the Country Club, courtesy of our friends at White Claw. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show at 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
We heard from Gene Steratore about this one earlier in the closing seconds. Gene?
Yeah, Jim. As Todd Jerome is bringing the ball up the court, he accidentally bumps the ball, as we can see, off of his back foot. Now, it's not touched the defender. He then repossesses this ball with both hands. That ends his dribble. Then he makes the decision to dribble again, which by rule is a double dribble. Wow. It's a tough judgment play, and if Auburn touches the ball at all, it's a reset and he gets a dribble again. But that's what you're looking at here. That's a double dribble violation.
Gene Steratore doing a really good job.
I know. I know.
What?
Just,
why are you making that face?
Because I get that he wants to bail out his guys and it's all a union gig and everything and you got to stay set. You're right. He pointed out all the issues at hand. But you can't say that it's a tough judgment call when the next sentence is, by rule, it's a double dribble.
Then it's not a judgment call.
There's
right?
not a judgment there. It's by rule. It's in the damn book. Read the words.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz of the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, Michigan State, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. I think for this completely arbitrary reason, I'm going to root for Texas Tech.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and it's this, and I did not know about this. I want to appreciate a texter who sent this in. Time Magazine reports that Texas Tech decided to do something as a team before a February 9th road game at Oklahoma. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think I'd seen something like this. Go ahead.
Senior captain Norense Odiasi, 6'9 center, came up with an idea. Let's bag up all our cell phones before bed. Get locked in, Odiasi said. No distractions. That's sort of like the rule that my wife and I and friends have when we go out to dinner with other couples. Everybody moves their phones to the center of the table.
First one to
grab their phone pays for dinner.
Yeah, I get it.
Yep. So we actually can have a civilized adult dinner conversation. But the players complied. Texas Tech won that game, and a routine was born. Chris Beard already has no love for cell phones. He bans them at team meals, at a two-day team bonding retreat, at a ranch 100 miles south of Lubbock. The players surrendered their devices.
Wait, you have to leave Lubbock to really get away from it all? Are you kidding?
We got to get out of the hustle Lubbock and bustle
is
of Lubbock.
Middle of God. It's in the middle of nowhere.
So Beard pushed Odiasi's idea even further. Cell phones would be collected on all nights of a road trip, not just the night before a game. Odiasi said, that was never my idea. Some of the guys still give me stuff for that. But they're 13-1, now 14-1 since the Odiasi-ordered ban. Every night at a hotel, Texas Tech's junior manager knocks on players' doors around 11 to collect their phones. He puts them in a red and black Texas Tech cooler bag. Here's a smattering of groans. Can he do that at my house?
No, wait, no, you can't hire him. It's an NCAA violation. No, he wouldn't be eligible to play tonight if you hired him.
That'd be great if he just comes by. I mean, 11 is probably a little late. I would probably do it around 9, but I think that would be nice. So I'll root for Texas Tech.
All right, you'll root for Texas Tech. I'm going to root for Virginia because I found this delightful little anecdote from my former school. You mentioned the Bennett thing and wanting to exorcise the demons of everybody hating his style of play and not scoring points. And it goes all the way back to his dad, Dick Bennett, while he was coaching at, among other places, Wisconsin. So I'm reading through some of the preview stuff, just trying to make sure I've got a handle on the X's and O's things. And this is a Michael Rosenberg piece on Sports Illustrated, in Sports Illustrated. And it goes back to, Bennett the Younger and Bennett the Senior talking about how many people, once they...
You refer to it as like Bruegel the Elder. And
Pliny the Elder and Pliny the Younger, both good beers, one far to the other, though. And now you've got this, like both father and son are talking about how kind of aggrieved they are that they've gotten these programs, otherwise unheralded programs, Wisconsin especially in 2000, to these heights, and that the only thing that everyone's talking about is how slow and boring they are to play and how slow and boring they are to watch.
Are they denying that?
No, they're not.
Okay.
They're just saying, when did defense get boring? Like,
always.
We like doing this. This wins. Why is success not a fun thing for you to watch? So this is a 2000 story from Dick Bennett's 2000 Wisconsin team. That's Kirk Penny and Dwayne, all those guys. So against Michigan State in the national semifinal, Dick Bennett told all five of his players to not go for offensive rebounds. He wanted all five to drop back and stop Michigan State on the run.
Tear ass back. That used to, the Bulls would put it on their board. It just said tab.
In one,
tear ass back.
On one possession, somebody, an unnamed Wisconsin player, went up and grabbed an offensive rebound.
He called Orlando Tucker.
He called time. No, that was much after his time. Okay. Or much before his time. He called timeout and benched the unnamed player. That is the commitment that these guys have to the way they play. So because of that anecdote and how boring I found 2000s Wisconsin basketball team to watch, I'm going for Virginia to exercise the demons.
Yeah, I'm encouraged, though,
Wisconsin.
Right.
I'm encouraged
that they at least understand it, though. But the answer is it's both. It's about the achievement, and it's also about the aesthetics. You can't get away from one to the other because we have working televisions that show us Western Conference basketball, that show us NBA basketball. We can see what it looks like when immensely skilled players are doing what they can do from incredible distances. And obviously, college doesn't have that level of talent. But they don't lament it. Do what you do. Be pleased with your success. Don't apologize for it. But you can't be mad, Bennett family. You can't be mad that we don't want to watch your boring brand of basketball win.
I don't think they're mad. I think they might have been 20 years ago when that team was on the come and you had that kind of style getting played and shot clocks didn't exist.
The only time, here's where it matters, though. It does matter in recruiting. it does matter to an athletic director who has to make the decision if you're going to try to hire Chris Beard away from Texas Tech and say, we're going to, if UCLA, and now the rumors of Rick Barnes
going to say
UCLA really. Job. But when you do that, what are you telling your recruits about commitment, about what you're going to be asked to do, about what you may not be able to show scouts? So there is a balancing act there that's real, that's not just about the aesthetics of a fan when you're in a living room with somebody who has NBA dreams. There's a player poll that's out on The Athletic and the NBA that we're going to get to tomorrow, where there's some insight into coaches and insight into the coaches you want to play for and you don't want to play for, and I'm not going to spoil any of it, but all that kind of thing matters. If you're telling a recruit, you're going to have to come in and defensively absolutely bust your ass or you're not going to see the floor.
You know what? It kind of reminds me, honestly, it kind of reminds me of Calvin Johnson at Georgia Tech. And here's why. Calvin Johnson ends up going to Georgia Tech for a lot of different reasons. Some of them recruiting, some of them his family, all of it just kind of different. He's one of the best receivers we've seen in a very long time, but he went to a triple option university. And still, somehow with his talents, his size, his speed, all that kind of stuff, he's shown enough to get out of there, get drafted where he was, and become one of the NFL's all-time greats. Jared Culver is going to be, he'll get out of there. He'll get out of a system that limits shots. DeAndre Hunter will get out of Virginia and probably be a lottery pick. He'll make it out. And it's just makes it more difficult, especially in a draft like this, that's kind of, it's begging for somebody to get taken third overall, right? Mm-hmm. You've got Zion, and you've got Ja, and then you've got your debate about R.J. Barrett or Cam Reddish or Rui Hachimura.
I'm willing to be wrong about Barrett.
Other people, but you're just kind of fighting. Somebody, you need to go fight for that third spot, and in a system where otherwise maybe you'd be counted on for more offensive output or maybe depended on. From more of that stuff, going up and down the floor and running a little bit more like you saw at Duke or whatever, then maybe you've got a better chance. Maybe we're sitting here going, yeah, DeAndre Hunter's your third overall, or Jared Culver's your third overall. But we'd be set on it.
Or someone's in love with Rui Hachimura.
Yeah, I suppose. It feels a little bit different. Here's what I find interesting. It's the defensive styles that are going to fight each other a little bit here. The Cavaliers want to play against that Texas Tech defensive style where everyone's switching everything.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the shooting, it looks like, or at least have in the tournament to counteract all of that hedging. Tech switches everything, though. And the issue is, Duke switched everything against Virginia twice this year. They won both games. One of them without Zion, one of them with. But that whole style, as much as Virginia wants to play against it, as much as it's kind of tiered or grouped around that kind of defensive matchup, they haven't succeeded where Duke did.
Yeah, they're going to need some individual performances where this will be a game where do you have a guy who can beat his guy? And on Virginia, this is maybe when your NBA, your top NBA prospect has to have his NBA star turn. Because it was Jerome. The only guy that was really working to get his was Jerome. And tonight is not a night where that can be the case.
I was really surprised. When we were talking, what was it, Friday or Thursday, about getting over the top of some of those doubles.
Yep.
All that kind of, I thought Cassius Winston would be fast enough to do that. He was not.
No, he wasn't.
No, he just wasn't that guy that night. I was really surprised by it. Speaking of Texas Tech, did you see that Michigan State, Gonzaga, and Michigan all combined to go 15 for 69 from three against Texas Tech? That's what they do. They eat your three-point attempts alive. They close out like crazy people.
You have been watching some video on Lucas Giolito, and I just want to get your quick, like, in a nutshell scouting report from what you saw in this last troubling outing.
He's just in the zone way too much with breaking stuff. I don't know that he had the overpowering swing and miss on anything that was out. And his new delivery is admittedly very difficult for me to pick up, because when you all of a sudden, when you've got all those big levers, it goes one way. When you've got those big levers working over long spaces, it's really easy to go, oh, I see what's going on here. Oh, I see what the issue is here. You're all over these places.
But he was trying to make it more compact.
And
he was
trying now,
to punch the ball a little bit more.
It's why he's done it, is because now there are fewer things moving, but now there are fewer things to find. You know, because if that arm just kind of punches up, it's not a Gator, you know, like Keith Folk thing that pops up and out, or like a Nate Jones thing. It is kind of a punch up and then through. It's different to see that arm swing and different to see his legs kind of work through that delivery here.
We're also watching his handset position, trying to see if maybe he was tipping something based on where he was coming set.
Yeah, and it looks like the set might be a little bit different of where he drops it below belt or whatever, but probably not enough. I think what happened is he caught a lot of zone with breaking stuff against the Mariners lineup that has been hitting really well in the first week of the season. I think he ran into hot bats, and I think his stuff wasn't finishing.
We've got Lawrence Holmes coming up in just a bit, but we're not done yet. The Bernstein and McKnight Show, part of our big day here for our Cubs opening day broadcast. The Country Club, 3462 North Clark Street. A lot of people already drinking, and a lot of people enjoying their White Claw hard seltzer. I'm a grapefruit guy. What about you? You got the mango.
I'm holding the mango.
High rec for the grapefruit, which I just had the other day after a workout. It's there's never a bad time for White Claw hard seltzer made pure. You got Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Quit screaming at me, dude.
I'm not screaming at you.
You just damn did.
Oh, Mox.
The party will roll on with Lawrence Holmes in charge, and he is here. What's happening, man?
Hello, men.
Hey, last time we talked, we were discussing the Jose Quintana outing and wondering what might happen. I think you and I were both of the mind that it was setting up for something bad.
Yeah, and then it did. It set up for something real bad.
Ooh, that's not good.
Yeah, it was a really interesting weekend because even yesterday, there was almost a relief I saw on Twitter of, oh, well, the Cubs just kind of lost normally.
Which is just a garden variety loss,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. This is just kind of a loss, and the bullpen was really good yesterday.
Nobody hits Josh Hader anyway.
Right. And then you had you have Yelich doing his thing, and it's like, oh, typical type of loss that you usually see. And now it's opening day, and the Cubs feel like they'll get some energy from being back home. I read, was it Whitmire, I guess, said that the reporters for the Cubs were complaining to Craig Counsell that they had run out of underwear because of the road trip. To which my reply is, there are stores everywhere. You can go get some new underwear.
Yeah, you're allowed to buy more with your per diem. Or you could petition the Players Association to get you an underwear per diem.
No, the reporters. Not the players. The reporters. Well,
reporters run out of underwear anyway.
Of course they do.
They're gross.
I'm sure there's a Target in Milwaukee. I'm sure of it.
I found a Gap in Paris when I forgot underwear.
Of course. Because running out of underwear is not a thing in 2019.
It's not supposed to be. You got to wear it, though. I hear some of the beat writers, they go commando.
I mean,
don't make me think about
this. Look, if you got to go commando, you got to go commando. That's up to you. All I'm saying is that don't tell me you ran out of underwear because there are stores everywhere.
But underwear costs money.
Not that much.
Reporters don't want to buy
them. Not enough that it would prohibit you
from
wearing new bought ones versus dirty old ones.
Or you could fashion something out of paper towels, perhaps.
Something from the press box?
Right. Like the guy in the back getting a bunch of cafeteria napkins for the press meal.
We've all had that moment, though, right? All of us have been on the road. You've had that moment where you're like, oh, I didn't pack everything that I needed.
Laundromat.
Right. No,
absolutely.
No, you go commando. Underwear costs money and laundry costs time. I don't have either one of those things. The hell with it. You just forge ahead.
Apparently, the 708 says there is literally a Target right behind Miller Park on the same street.
That's absolutely
Thank
true.
You, Texter. Like, of course. And I'm sure like whoever was, and I guess Council called them soft. He's like, you guys are soft, man. We're pretty soft. We're having to wear your dirty underwear.
Yeah, they got to be. Look, Council and his team, they better be pretty pleased about the way things have started for them. They're really damn good. And if the ball's popping like this and they're lifting it in the air the way they are, they're going to score a lot of runs.
Let me ask you both a question. I don't know if I'll have time to do it today. Maybe I'll do it on tomorrow's show. How much better do you think the Brewers are than the Cubs? And I mean, let's try and take what's happened in the first week and a half out of it. Like, just on paper, How much better do you think they are?
On paper, zero.
Do they get even?
Oh, yeah. If you're actually saying on paper, like Pakoda, like if you were to just say, look at what the expected ranges are of performances, I had... And the fact is, I had Yelich as a regression candidate.
But didn't Pakoda have the Brewers' 86 wins?
They did, and the Cubs is 79. And but their pitching staff, nah.
Agreed.
Do they get a healthy bullpen at any point? Like in this?
No. I mean, as constructed. As constructed, how much better do you think they are than the Cubs?
They're probably 2 wins better.
Okay.
They're probably 2 wins better.
All right, yeah, but that's within the margin of error. I think that's the same as saying that it's equal.
Yeah, but with the advantage going to the Brewers, with the tip of the cap going to the Brewers, yeah, and saying if you did this 1,000 times, that the Brewers probably come out with, I don't know, 55 division wins.
I'd agree with that. I'm not a fan of their pitching staff, and assuming that things aren't going pear-shaped for this Cubs staff.
Yeah, but I'm a big fan of their farm system. I like Keston Hiura a lot, and if they're going to make a move for starting pitching, that gives them something that the Cubs can't go get.
Right.
So would you expect either Dallas Keuchel or Kimbrel to join the Brewers at some point this season?
More likely than joining the Cubs.
Well, Tom Ricketts made that clear this morning.
Very clear.
It's one of the things I want to share with the audience, because I was sitting at I was on my morning walk listening to Mully and Haw, and I was like, okay, I'm curious to see what Tom Ricketts has to say. You know, it's an ownership interview, so you know it's not like it's going to be incredibly engrossing. But he, from jump, he was like, look, we have spent $210 million. That's about all we're spending. So we have what we need in the clubhouse, and the guys that can get the most out of the guys in the clubhouse, and you can kiss my ass because we're not spending any more money.
That's been a consistent message from the organization the entire time. And I'd never heard even phone calls in on Kimbrel. I hadn't heard any interest whatsoever, and a lot of that is because there are a lot of teams that think he is on the precipice of a steep decline and not worth what he continues to ask.
He was good last year. He had a whip just around 1, but the walk rate tripled.
So you just think, what the Cubs need.
Just right. Let's get 4 walks per 9 on your closer. That's great. But he does, or at least did last year, have the kind of stuff that he could marmol himself, the good kind of marmol, like walk 2 and then strike out 3 and then you've got yourself a save. That's really,
I have a negative connotation
with
when you say to marmol oneself. We could conjugate the verb to marmol.
But remember, there was good marmoling and there was bad marmoling.
I always had this theory about facing Carlos Marmol. Don't bring a bat.
Don't swing. He can't throw 3 strikes before he throws 4 balls.
I'm going to stand right here with no bat, and you're going to walk me before you strike me out.
That's kind of the Carl Edwards Jr. deal. That goes back to the Yu Darvish at bat in the playoffs, and I was thinking the same thing.
I enjoyed that this weekend, too. You get out of here. You're injured. You get out of here, too.
Wait, I'm injured?
Yes, you're injured. Yes, you are.
Mike, you're very hurt, remember? That's the thing, too. They need Carl Edwards back.
Of course they do.
That team needs Carl Edwards back. They need the real Carl Edwards back. As difficult as that might be for Cubs fans to understand and watch or want to have back because he's been so aggravating, they need him back.
I wonder if they need to go back to reconstructing his old delivery. Because after you have the whole weird thing of, that's illegal, oh, okay, I'll just go back to the way I was doing it. But you haven't been doing it all spring.
Right.
If this is actually therapeutic for him to then go down to the minors, to not do it in the spotlight, and then go back to whatever it is that he was doing beforehand.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.